finding answers, if we're not just going to Google, then we're looking to followers of Christ. And there's a lot of different passages that are going to kind of help us there. So I want to start with this question. Given everything you just learned from the previous lesson, why ask a Christian? If the internet is right there and you can say, hey, Alexa, or hey, Siri, or whatever, like, why actually ask a Christian? Okay, they're really bad at philosophical questions. That's a good one. What else? Why ask a Christian? Why bring your questions, big questions, to Christians? Yes. Okay, because they can actually draw on their experience. Yes, ma'am. Very similar. So being able to draw on experience rather than just numbers and data. I mean, computers are great at numbers. They're great at video games, but they're not so great at purpose, and they're not so great at spiritual. Anything else? What else can you think of? Why ask a Christian? What about, like, if you think about the streetlight thing that Josh told us? Why ask a Christian? Yeah, they can actually bring light to the park, right? They can bring light to these other areas. Let me, what if I put up this picture? The internet is so fast and so full and so available. Why ask a Christian? Here is a truck driver that was blindly following his GPS. How'd that work out for him? Right? Think through this for a minute. What would be the parallel? What happened to this guy when he just blindly followed what the computer could tell him? Yes, sir. Thank you. It led him to a place that he couldn't go. What else? How else would you elaborate on that idea? That is very much what I'm looking for. What happened to this guy? Okay, he crashed and, like, destroyed something really valuable. And we don't want you to destroy your heart. We don't want you to destroy your soul. Like, we don't want you to destroy a lot of things. Anything else you would say about this one? Why not just blindly follow what the internet is saying? Yes, sir. Okay, that's true. Any other truck driver would have said, like, dude, these are 14-foot trucks. This is a 12-foot bridge. This is not going to end well. So other people in that range could have told him. Here's what I want you to take away just to start with, and you can put this in the very first blank on your handout if you want to fill this in. Why ask a Christian? Because the internet is not going to always lead you in the right direction. This guy should have been rerouted, but his GPS took him the wrong way, the wrong place, the wrong direction. You need to turn to followers of Christ because they can help you go in the narrow way. They can help you actually get moving in the right direction. So there's a lot of reasons, actually, that we would want to ask a Christian. And I need some people to read for me this morning, so I'm going to call on different ones to read. But what you're getting in this picture is that we need more. And what Josh was making abundantly clear to us is we need more than just a quick Google search. We need to be led in the right direction. And so I want to cover with you guys three essential needs to get started. We're going to have some group projects to break up in a few minutes, but before we get there, I just think we all have to be on the same page with these three essential needs. So take your Bibles over to 1 Kings 12, and I need a volunteer to read this. It's kind of long. 1 Kings chapter 12, it's a familiar story, verse 3 down to verse 16. Who's going to read that for us? 1 Kings 12, 3 to 16. Okay, thanks, Denver. Stand up big and, like, just belt it out for us. 1 Kings 12, 3 to 16.
And they sent and called him, and Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and said to Rehoboam, your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore, lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke on us, and we will serve you. He said to them, go 3 days, then come again to me. So the people went away. Then King Rehoboam took counsel with the old men who had stood before Solomon his father while he was yet alive, saying, how do you advise me to answer this people? And they said to him, if you will be a servant to this people today and serve them, and speak good words to them when you answer them, then they will be your servants forever. But he abandoned the counsel that the old men gave him, and took counsel with the young men who had grown up with him, and stood before him. And he said to them, what do you advise that we answer this people who have said to me, lighten the yoke that your father put on us? And the young men who had grown up with him said to him, thus shall you speak to this people who said to you, your father made our yoke heavy. but you lighten it for us. Thus shall you say to them, my little finger is thicker than my father's thighs. And now, whereas my father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king said, come to me again the third day. And the king answered the people harshly, and forsaking the counsel that the old men had given him, he spoke to them according to the counsel of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of affairs brought about by the Lord that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord spoke by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. And when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, what portion do we have in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Look now to your own house, David. So Israel went to their tents.
Thank you. Couldn't ask for a better reading. Okay, so when we look at this first story, and we're thinking about the three things that we really need if we're going to get answers better than those that Google can give. Look at verse 6. Look back at verse 6. Who did he have the opportunity to listen to, according to verse 6? Yes, Ethan. Okay, older and wiser people. Who specifically? Was it just like they went to the old folks' home and walked up and down the halls? Like, who specifically were those older, wiser people? Yeah. So it's the trusted advisors and counselors of Solomon. Is anybody else here a little bit confused? Why would Solomon need counselors in the first place? What do we know about Solomon? Yeah, he was extremely wise. God gave him the highest wisdom of anyone that had ever lived. And yet even he had this group of older men that he could run things by and get their input on. So in this section, right, Jeroboam, Rehoboam, they have the chance, Rehoboam has the chance to listen to those guys in verse 6. But who does he end up listening to? Yeah, listens to his peers. We raise your hand if you've had this story in Bible class. You've had this story in Bible class, right? So you tell me, what's like the big mom and dad want you to get this and take away from this lesson? Yeah, this is the first one. We need the wisdom of people who are older. If Solomon, the wisest guy, needed wisdom from people who are older, then so do we. And the point is, they can just see a better outcome than we can. He thinks that if he comes in and he's extra tough and he's extra like boastful and prideful, and he's like, you know, you haven't seen nothing yet. The thought is that he'll be the greatest ruler. But the older people can see a better outcome than he can see. They're saying, just do the people this one little favor and they will happily serve you all the days of their life. But he gets so wrapped up in listening to his peers that he makes the wrong decision. Okay, go to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Easy, super easy reading. Who wants this one? 1 Corinthians 4, 14 to 16. 1 Corinthians 4, 14 to 16. Super easy. Okay, Blaine, take that one for us good and loud. Thank you. So that last phrase, he says, that you have lots of teachers, you only have one dad, like spiritually, I'm like your dad, I've shown you these things from the very beginning. And the end of verse 16, what does he say? Yeah, be imitators of me. Now that's kind of my assignment for this lesson. As Bill was setting this up, Josh has shown us where not to look and that we should be looking to God. We actually need the example of people who are Christ-like. It's mentioned here in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16. You've got this dad who cares about you. You've got this guy that is your teacher. But look over at chapter 11, verse 1. He tells the church again, chapter 11 and verse 1. Who wants to read that one? Nate, you got it? 11:1? Can you do it? 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. Have you got it? You looked at me like you had it. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. Very good. Be imitators of me as I am of Christ. You can look at me and anything I'm doing that is the same thing Christ would do, that's something that you can copy. Philippians 4 verse 9 hits the similar idea. The things you've heard and seen and learned from me, do those kind of things. Here's where my assignment really comes in for you guys. It's the job of older Christians to take biblical principles like forgiveness or patience or kindness or sober-mindedness. And we're supposed to show you what that looks like. We're supposed to set an example for you so that you can like really get, like, oh, that's what loving your neighbor really involves. Or, oh, that's like what being a humble servant, a foot washer, that's what that really looks like. When a little baby somewhere in the auditorium is eating Cheerios and there's like a ton of Cheerio crumbs left in the pew, and somebody comes by and picks up every single one of those tiny little Cheerio crumbs, and they're kind of mushy because they got baby spit on them, and you're like, ew! Yeah, that's being a foot washer. That's like doing any job if it's helpful. So it's the job of people, older Christians, to set this example. So it's not just about answering questions or foreseeing a better outcome. It's also about an example. And then my favorite, go to Hebrews 11. Wait, is that right? Hebrews 13. Go to Hebrews chapter 13. And there are a couple of critical verses in this chapter that are going to show us this big need. Hebrews chapter 13. It's easy to remember this because it's the sevens. It's verse 7 and it's also verse 17 and they go together. So in my Bible, it's actually kind of cool. They're right across from each other. And I have them highlighted right across from each other. So, okay, you're nodding. Read verse 7 and verse 17 for us. Hebrews chapter 13, first verse 7. Very good. And then flip over to verse 17. All right, you guys, look at verse 17 closely. What are these leaders watching out for? Your souls. All right. So let's imagine for a moment that I'm not horrible at basketball, and that's going to stretch your imagination. But let's just imagine for just a minute that I'm not horrible at basketball and I'm on a basketball team and I'm sitting there and I'm at practice. What does my coach care about if I'm on his basketball team? Yeah, he cares about my basketball skills. All right, let's imagine I'm not horrible at playing the piano, and that should be easy to imagine. Okay, so, and if I'm at my piano lessons, what does my piano teacher care about? How well I play the piano. Look at verse 17 again. What does this guy care about? It's the same answer, but it's more significant. Guys, you need, literally need this. You need the leadership of people who care the most about your soul. You have coaches that care about your athletic performance. You have teachers that care about your skills or your academic performance. You have friends that care about your social performance. You need people in your life that the thing they care about the most is your soul. And they're the one that speaks up and says, okay, like this might be great for your career, but it's going to be horrible for your spiritual life. Or this might be great for your popularity, but it's going to be devastating to your walk with God. You actually need the voice and the example and the leadership of people who care the most about your soul. You have guidance counselors at school that care about your career or the college that you get into. But who cares about your soul? When we look at John chapter 4, as Josh pointed out for us, what Jesus is talking about for this woman is offering her living water. Someone that is advocating for and speaking up about the very needs of her soul. And we need to like zero in on this one a lot. Look at verse 7. Remember those who led you. Who do you think of as spiritual leaders in your life? Give me an example of someone that is a spiritual leader in your life. The elders, great example. Give me one of the elders that like his name just comes to your mind, or the wife's name that just comes to your mind, like, oh yeah, they just like are all about a good example. Russ. Okay, give me another one. Sewell. Yep. You know, there's these different elements that just, it comes straight to your mind. You can say Bill. Bill's not in here right now. Bill. Right? Spiritual leaders in your life. Verse 7 says, look at those who are leading you. They spoke the word of God to you, considering the result. Is there anybody that you know spiritually, maybe it's a camp counselor, maybe it's a preacher, maybe it's an elder, maybe it's a deacon, and you like the way their life looks right now? Like you look at their life and you go, okay, when I'm 55, I want my life to look like their life looks now. Does that make sense? There's people, and like I'm looking around and I just keep thinking of your dads. I'm like, I like the way Adam Drum's life looks. Like that's a pretty cool life. I like the way Clayton Johnson's life looks. I want those jet skis. Like that's a pretty cool life. Like, is there anybody that you look at and you're like, I kind of want my life to look the way their life looks? Can you give me anybody? I'm good at being patient. Who do you look at and you think, when I'm older, I want my life to look like theirs? I don't think that's the spiritual leader we're talking about. Someone's spiritual leadership, that we look at their life and we want our life to look like theirs. That's why we're doing this lesson, is to make you think about it. Someone that you would look and you would say, I want my life to end up like theirs. What do you think? Who are you thinking of? Yeah, Garrett. Yeah, you're like the one right there I'm pointing at. Who could you think of that you're like, I would like my life to end up kind of like theirs? Interesting. Guys, this should actually be a super easy question. We have harder questions later. This should be a super easy. Look, we want our life to end up like Sewell. Because Sewell is 90 years old. He lives a quarter of a mile that way in a small house. But he is richer than Elon Musk. We want our life to look like that. We want our life to look like James Newman, who is just constantly serving people, who has a great job, a great family, like a beautiful house. Like these should be easy. A marriage that is rich and loving. We want our life to end up. Look at verse 7 again. Remember who led you, who spoke the word of God to you, and considering the result of their conduct, considering how their life is turning out, imitate their faith. You want to have the faith of Sewell so that you get to the result of Sewell. You want to have the faith of James Newman or Nancy Friesmeyer or Kayla Groen or Anna Lee Peake. You want to have the faith of those people so that your life moves in that direction. So here's your points, zeroing in on these two verses. Number one, a Christian that wants nothing but the best for you. Like I have no doubt in my mind that our elders here want nothing but the best for you. They want to see you succeed in your friendships. They want to see you succeed spiritually. They want to see you succeed in your career. Like they want nothing but the best for you. For me growing up, that was our preacher, Mr. Sean. Like, I love Mr. Sean. He was the camp director dude. So, like, if y'all enjoy Georgia camp and you think about the directors, Miss Amy and is it Glenn? Yeah, and Mr. Glenn, like, they want nothing but the best for you. And that was Mr. Sean for us growing up. He wanted nothing but the best for us. Biblically, that's like Paul and Timothy. That Paul wants nothing but the best for Timothy. He just wants to see him grow and use his talents and be happy and do great work and make a difference in people's lives. And he wants to see him go to heaven, right? He wants nothing but the best for him. A Christian whose results you would love to duplicate. That you can look over and go, wow, like Rachel Legrone is amazing. Right? That you can look over and you can pick these different people and you can say to yourself, okay, Josh Carter, that's a really great guy. Bill Sanchez, that's a really great guy. Eric Borlaug, that's a really great guy. I want to duplicate those kind of results. I want to know the Bible the way they know the Bible. I want to help people the way they help people. I want to like be stable and happy the way they're stable and happy. Results you would love to duplicate. For me, that was a preacher named David Banning. And David is just awesome. And I got to see him a couple weeks ago, and it was just, you know, highlight for me even to have breakfast with this guy. because he was really good about preaching and connecting with people. And he's published a lot of different Bible workbooks, and he has two great sons and an awesome marriage, and he's preached with all these different churches all over the country, and he always had a heart for young preachers. Like, I just love this guy. And I'm like, hey, I would like my life to turn out pretty similar to the way his life has turned out. Andrew, did you enjoy riding in his red convertible? Yes, we enjoyed riding in his red convertible when we were in Houston. Like, I would be happy with having his same red convertible, right? I would like my life to turn out the way his life. That's the point of Hebrews 13. Look for spiritual leaders that can be a role model like that. A Christian who is this leader. For me, this was one of the elders I grew up with, Brother Webb. I think his first name is technically Leslie, which is not like the most masculine name you've ever heard. But Brother Webb is what we always called him. And Brother Webb was awesome. And he was kind of a big, heavyset dude. And he would come up and he would do the closing announcements. And he would just basically point at visitors and be like, do you want to come to lunch with me today? You need to come over to the house and have lunch with me today. Like, he was the most friendly, hospitable guy. And it was a small country church. Nobody was embarrassed. He wasn't like making people feel awkward. But he just was so hospitable. And I love that. When I went down to Florida College, my freshman Bible class teacher was Marty Pickup. Unfortunately, he died of a heart attack a few years ago. But it's Grant's uncle, if y'all know Grant and Chelsea. So Marty was just amazing. Anytime he was teaching from the Old Testament, he would use this phrase. He would say, in the ancient Near Eastern culture, in the ancient Near Eastern this, in the ancient Near Eastern that. If you ever hear me preaching and I say, in the ancient Near East, that's a Marty Pickup phrase. And I loved him. He helped me understand the Bible academically for the very first time in my life. Like, I'd done Bible study. I'd gone to church. I'd been in classes like you guys are in classes. But no one ever showed me how to really study until I met Marty. And I just, he's a spiritual giant in my life. And the fourth one, the ones who embody Christ face to face. Skip down to verse 24. Can I get a lady to read for us? Who would read verse 24? Okay, thank you. Miss Mann, verse 24. Okay, so he uses the leaders one more time. Greet them. And to greet literally meant to be face to face with them. To express in communication and conversation your love and appreciation for them. You go greet these leaders. And the people who were face to face for me, again, I'm going to repeat Sean, our evangelist. He was just such a huge influence. But let's be honest, a lot of it came from my dad too. That my dad would study the scriptures and my dad was a good leader and he later served as an elder. And he was just a good guy who face to face showed us forgiveness and strength and humility and commitment. Now, why do you think I've underlined a Christian in all four of these points? Why do you think I did that? Our title is Finding Answers in the Followers of Christ. What's the alternative? Okay, to find someone like Christ, yes, ma'am? That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Because you're only going to really get this if it's a New Testament Christian. It's not going to be just like some random person at the Christian bookstore that doesn't worship God according to the New Testament. Like, you need a New Testament Christian. You need someone that follows the Bible carefully. And you need those people in your life to say, yeah, I'd like my life to turn out like that. I mean, I don't want to be a clone. I got to be me and I got to have my own talents. But there's a general direction in their life. I need to imitate that. Guys, this is a fundamental need. We need all three of these things, okay? We need the wisdom of those that are older. We need this leadership of the ones that care about our soul. And we need, what's the middle one? Example of the one that is Christ-like. Example of the one that's Christ-like. So here's some of the questions I had to ask these people. I remember when I was in college, I called Linda White and I said, I just don't know about this. I don't know what to major in. I don't know what career I should be pursuing. And I was so glad to be able to talk to a Christian that was putting what is spiritually good and right at the front. And I'll tell you, she did not tell me, go be a preacher. It wasn't like a super churchy answer that she gave me. But she was answering my questions and concerns from the lens of a Christian, from the lens, the perspective of someone that cared about God. And then after I'd already started preaching, I actually had to call my dad and be like, I don't know about this whole instrumental music thing. Like, I've taken the piano lessons in high school, and I definitely love some of these songs that I hear on the radio. Is this really that big of a deal? Like, is this really wrong? And I remember literally leaving my office at the church building, driving to the park, talking on the phone with my dad and crying, trying to get to the bottom of this question. I needed not just to read the verses. I needed to talk to a follower of Christ to understand how to apply the verses, to understand how the answers really connected with the whole entirety of Scripture and what God is doing. And then if we rewind back to when I was in college, I was a junior in college, and it was like one of those questions I was just thinking about, but had never really asked anybody. And there was a college age Devo on a Thursday night. And sure, I could have just stayed in my dorm, or I could have gone to the movies. I could have done a lot of different things on campus. But I went to the college Devo on Thursday night. And I'm so glad I did. I will never forget sitting in Jim Deason's living room and him going through like 11 different evidences for the resurrection of Christ. And I left that living room going, whoa, that is a rock solid case. This man died and rose from the dead. And if that's true, and I left knowing it was true, that changes everything. Like that is just a huge, huge thing. So there are these questions, and I'm just telling you, I wasn't going to find them on my own, and I wasn't going to find them on Google. I was going to find them in followers of Christ. And I don't know exactly what those questions are going to be for you, but I know that they will come. And I'm telling you right now, you need a Hebrews 13 kind of man or woman to go and find those questions with. So here's what happens when you start asking followers of Christ. Here's the type of answers you get. Have y'all noticed that all of these streaming services are just adding a plus to their name or to their logo? I think this is the weirdest thing. What do you think Disney is trying to communicate when they're like, you need to pay us $7 because you can have Disney Plus? Or Apple is like, well, we can't get anybody subscribed, so we're going to give this away. But you like, check it out. And you need to eventually pay us $4.99 and you can have Apple Plus. What's the plus mean? Why are they putting a plus there? What do you think? Okay. They're trying to show there's something more. Very, very good. What else? Elaborate on this. Well, how many people have Disney Plus at home? So, yeah, I thought so. So you tell me, what are they going for here with Disney Plus? What's the plus all about? Okay, it's supposed to be like, here's our best stuff. It's premium. Good. What else? So there's more. There's premium. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Yes, it's like, hey, if you like anything Disney, we're telling you we are your one-stop go-to source. We've pulled all of our stuff off of Hulu and all of our stuff off of Netflix. If you want Disney, here it is. And it's Disney Plus. It's the best we have. It's all that it's like to be in our parks or to go to our stores. But it's all of that experience, boom, dropped right in your lap. It's Disney Plus. Take your Bibles back to Luke 10. Do you understand that when you bring your questions to followers of Christ, what you end up getting is not just an answer. It's not just a percentage of water in your body or the number of feet in a mile or 8 minutes and 20 seconds for the speed of light, right? You get more than just an answer. Who would read this one? Luke 10, 29 and 37. Luke 10, 29 and 37. Who's got it for me? Emery, you got it? Luke 10, 29 and 37? Sure. Thanks. All right. So he asks his question in verse 29, who is my neighbor? Like, I don't really have to love all these people, do I? I mean, I don't have to really help all these people, do I? And Jesus gives him the parable of, the Good Samaritan. That is not just a little tiny answer to say, oh, your neighbor is anybody within 6 feet of you. It's an answer plus a change in his thinking. It's an answer plus a change in his heart. It's an answer plus a challenge to go be a genuinely merciful person. When you asked Jesus questions, you never got just a little bitty answer. You always got answers plus. Andrew, read this one. Luke 20, 22 to 26. Luke 20, 22 to 26. Y'all flip over to Luke 20. Go ahead, bud. What's the plus in this answer? Should we pay our taxes? What's the plus here? Jesus doesn't give just a yes or no, does he? There's a plus. What's the plus in his answer? What's special about the way he answers? Eli, what do you think? It's not as simple as yes or no. Okay, that's very good. What do you think, Eli? What's the plus in this answer? Okay, that before we pay our taxes, there's something that God actually deserves. And what does God deserve? Yeah, our whole heart, our whole life, our whole focus. There's a plus here. So what's their response in verse 26 when they get that kind of an answer? Yeah, we're never going to be able to trick this guy. There's no sense in even trying to trap him in questions. Because when you bring your questions to spiritual people, to people with a spiritual answer, they can answer it and more. I want to bring my answers to followers of Christ because that's the kind of answer I really need. If you think about the truck that like was blindly following GPS, remember that picture from the beginning of the lesson? See, I can put in an address. And GPS can say, go here, go here, go here, go here. I can ask the internet a question, but it will only answer the question that I ask. If I ask the internet, how do I get a credit card so that I can buy a brand new gaming computer? The internet will tell me how to get a credit card. Jesus would say, wait, just a minute. You don't need a credit card. You need contentment. You need gratefulness for the things you already had. See, there's a very, the internet can tell me how to get the credit card. Jesus can tell me what kind of heart I'm supposed to have. Jesus can answer the question I should be asking rather than the question that I am asking. And I'm going to tell you right now, one of the biggest blessings in my life has been sitting in the elders' meetings of the elders here at Embry Hills and watching them discuss questions that have been raised and seeing them go behind and beyond the question to say, but what we should really be asking is, what's the most loving thing to do in this situation? What we should really be asking is, what will most help people get to heaven in this situation? Jesus did that. Our elders do that. We get answers that have something extra. And these answers are not telling us to just be like the next leader of Amazon or of Apple or of Google. Or like, they're not answers that tell us be like everybody else. They are answers that show us how to be different. Would somebody just read John 15, verse 18 to 20? John 15, verse 18 to 20. Who's got that one for me? Okay, thank you, Blaine. Thank you. If they hated Jesus, they're going to hate you. If they persecuted Jesus, they're going to persecute you. It doesn't mean you have the wrong answer. It just means that the world is wrong. That the world is missing something. That the world is like that woman at the well that was never really satisfied. And they don't understand why you're living so differently. when you bring your questions to followers of Christ, you get bonus answers, you get answers that are countercultural, and you get answers that help you avoid pain and regret. Let's flip back to Ecclesiastes. I think it's pretty cool that Josh and I both ended up there. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes. Look at the very end, chapter 11, the end of chapter 11. That always takes me longer to get to that book. It's kind of a skinny little book. Okay. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Who would read verse 9 and verse 10 as well as verse 1 of the next chapter? Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 9 and 10. Got it? Okay, go ahead, Mr. Hamlet. Okay, so if you're a person that underlines in your Bible, there's three R words. Verse 9, the very first word is rejoice. Underline rejoice. Verse 10, the second word is remove. Underline remove. And then verse 1 of chapter 12 is remember. When you are young, you're supposed to rejoice, you're supposed to remove, and you're supposed to remember. It's like the perfect little section here, and it's so easy to follow along. So rejoice, remove, and remember. Verse 9 says, rejoice and follow the impulses of your heart. For me, that meant go bungee jumping. Okay, that's what that meant for me. It was like, there's nothing sinful about bungee jumping. Like, there's some things I'm going to avoid because I'm doing chapter 12, verse 1. I'm remembering my Creator. But there's nothing sinful about bungee jumping. And that looks fun, so I'm going to do that. And remember I mentioned Linda White, the lady that I called when I was like, what career should I pursue? For her 60th birthday, she took us bungee jumping with her. So fun. So fun, right? That's the idea of verse 9. If there's something that looks fun and it's not evil, now's the time to try it. Try that roller coaster. Try those jet skis. Try this. Try that. Like, make this giant cookie cake. Like, whatever cool thing there is to do. If it's not sinful, now's the time to try it. That's what verse 9 is about. But look at verse 10. Remove grief and anger, or remove vexation. Now is also the time. Please, 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 please. Do not go do some stupid, sinful thing that's going to hurt you and others. Because there will be plenty of people that are giving you answers to say, oh, let's just do this thing. And I'm saying, please, 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 don't do that. In fact, I wish I didn't have to put this quote up, but you need to see it. In their 40s and 50s, it is only fools that look back at their youth and wish they had spent more time in sin. A time is just around the corner that it's going to be obvious. The drugs, the lust, the disrespect, the lies, the greed, the faithlessness, the pride. By the time you get really even into your late 20s and early 30s, they have revealed their true nature of pain and regret. And what Ecclesiastes is saying to us is, remove those things. Do the bungee jumping. Do the amusement parks. Do the girls' getaway weekend. But remove from yourself the pain and regret. Because there are many people in their 40s and their 50s that they look back at their youth and they wish they had spent more time listening to God. They wish they had followed the path of honesty and devotion and love and peace and purity. And so when you're bringing your questions to followers of Christ, you're going to get great answers. You get answers plus. You get answers that are different from our sinful world. You get answers that help you remove those pains and regrets before they kick in, so that you will remember your Creator in the days of your youth. So I'm going to give you guys a group project here. I think Timothy is the perfect example of this. His relationship with Paul, if you want to flip your worksheets over, his relationship in these four big ways allowed him to bring his concerns to Paul and get excellent answers. So I'm literally going to set a timer on my phone, and you've got four questions to answer here with your friends. What did Timothy learn? What did he see? What heart did he develop? and what treasure, what wealth was he given to hold on to? So, hey Siri, set a timer for 10 minutes and 30 seconds.
Okay, your timer is set for 10 minutes.
All right, go. Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. Time's up. All right. So, give me the first one. What did Timothy learn? 1 Corinthians 4:17. Timothy spent all this time with Paul. Paul met him as a young man, said, hey, I want you to come with me. There's so much potential here. I want nothing but the best for you. I can give you these answers. I can show you how to be of useful service in God's kingdom. What did Timothy learn according to 1 Corinthians 4:17? What did you guys get over here? Yes, Everett. Oh, the ways of Christ. Very good. The ways of Christ. What else? What else did you guys get up here? Okay, ways of Christ and imitator Paul, ladies back here. Ooh, right teaching. I like that phrase. We're going to come around to that again in just a second. So right teaching, ladies back here, what'd y'all get? Ways of Christ and what? As what, ways of Christ as well? Very good. Anybody else that your answer did not get represented by those answers? What did Timothy learn? All right, so here's kind of what I'll say in this particular case study. There was something special about the fact that Paul was consistent. Everything you said is right, but it's even more. Remember, it's answers plus. It's this idea that he learned about Christ and that there was a consistent commandment for every church and for every Christian in every place. It wasn't like there was one set of rules in Corinth and another set of rules in Jerusalem. And so there's not one set of rules for Boston and one set of rules for Atlanta. And there's not one set of rules for China and one set of rules for Canada. There's this consistency that he saw in every place that Paul just kept putting Jesus in front of people. So he learned that. And y'all did a great job with that one. All right, what's our next one? What did Timothy see? 2 Timothy 3:10-14. What'd you get for this? What kinds of things did Timothy see? Ben? Persecution. How many people had something about persecution in their box? Yes. Very good. So persecution is there. How did you elaborate about this? He saw persecution. Anything else in those verses right there about how Paul handled that persecution? There was endurance. So he got to see what that endurance really looks like, what it really takes to be driven out of the city and get up and go do it again the next day. And when we look at our elders, we look at our deacons, we look at our evangelists, we look at our parents, there is a picture of actual endurance. I can remember my dad would come home and he would lay down like this. I know you can see me really well, but he would just lay on his back and his knees would be up and he would sleep for like 10 minutes in the floor. And then he would get up and he would help my mom vacuum and cook dinner and all the other things. And like, he was exhausted and he would just crash in the floor, but he would get up and would keep on serving his family. And there's endurance there. And Timothy got to see, like, face to face what endurance looked like from Paul. Very good. So how do we have an answer plus here? What it looks like to keep going with a good heart, even when you're enduring hard times. Because through all those persecutions, he still kept his focus on his purpose and his faith and all of these awesome qualities. Timothy got to see that. And that makes a difference. That's the kind of answers you find in the followers of Christ. Third one, Timothy developed. What was your key word? There was a word that was repeated in both of those passages. Ladies in the back, what was your word? Uh-huh. Contentment. Who else had something along the lines of contentment? Was that a tricky one? She did. They did. What else did you have on this one? What kind of things did Timothy develop in his heart? Ethan, what'd you guys get? Nice. Compassion, righteousness, godliness, sojourn. What'd you guys get? Okay, that money was not the most important thing. Loida, what'd y'all get? What? A concerned heart. Very good. He was concerned about godly things. Concerned about more than just money. Good, concerned ideas. Anything that hasn't been represented yet? Yes, ma'am. he was an encourager. Good that he was going to these other places and helping to encourage these people. That's a very plus answer. Very nice. So Timothy developed a heart for people and the concerns of Jesus Christ. It wasn't like, oh, let me preach at 10 different churches so I can get 10 different paychecks. He wasn't concerned about the things of this world. He was concerned about the things of Jesus. Our souls being saved. Our lives being changed. Our marriages getting healthier. He was concerned about the things God was concerned about. And with that was this extra heart of contentment. All right, final one from your group work. What did Timothy learn to treasure? Things that he was entrusted with that he treasured. This is probably the hardest one. What'd you guys get? A good deposit, yes. True knowledge, that's awesome answers. Anything else? Yes, ma'am. Faith and love in Christ is the kind of the key phrase. Faith and love, not just a worldly, like, oh, I believe what it is. Faith and love in Christ, this true deposit, these things from Him. I'm going to say it this way. The truth of the gospel had been entrusted to Him. Like, He's the next generation, and you're the next generation, and we are passing into your hearts that we want to love God with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength. We want to seek first His kingdom and His righteousness. And when we pass that treasure into your heart, you don't trade it in for the stupid lies and arrogant know-it-alls of this world. Right? And that's what Josh talked about, that being chained to the light post, that Colossians being captive by empty and vain philosophies. Don't give up the real treasure for the garbage that's all around us. So these are the things that Timothy, I think, was learning from Paul. And I think it's not just Timothy. I think it's you. I want it desperately to be you. So in your little sections here with knowledge, love, faith, and courage, the top line is for you to write a Bible person. So like easy example, courage, Joshua, right? Courage, Esther. Just a Bible person on the top line. But then I want you to take a couple of minutes and give it some thought and put the name of a Christian that you know on the second line underneath the Bible character. So top line, does that make sense? Knowledge, top line, Bible character. Knowledge, second line, person that you actually have met or know. Yes, sir, you have a question? You're just thinking. Okay. Everybody understands that? A Bible character and a Christian that you know demonstrates these qualities. This is that imitate their conduct, imitate their faith. What Bible character did you put for love? Anybody got a Bible character for love yet? Am I rushing you? Jesus. Hey, there's an answer that's never wrong. Jesus. All right, you people putting Jesus on every blank. I see what you're doing. Who's got Mr. Marty on any of these blanks? That's what I'm thinking. He was going to be on my blanks. So Hebrews tells us right in chapter 12 that we're surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, because chapter 11 is the hall of fame of faith with all these amazing faithful people. And I'm wanting you to see we are surrounded by many witnesses. Right? It's all these people that we've been talking about all morning that would exemplify these characters. So I'll leave the real life Christians today as a private thing, but at least tell me your Bible answers. Who did you guys put for knowledge as a Bible character? Solomon. Who else? Everybody got Solomon? Daniel? Paul? Very good. The disciples, yes, they were constantly listening to Jesus. Like, that's the go-to source. Perfect. Very good. Who'd you put for love? Jesus and Paul? Mary, Elizabeth, Aquila and Priscilla. John, yes, John, the disciple of love. He writes so much about the word love and what real love is. Yes, sir? Barnabas, super encouraging guy. Good answer. Okay, faith. Bible characters for faith? Yes, ma'am. David? Abraham, father of faith. Stephen? Yes, willing to suffer for his faith. Awesome. Yes, sir. Yeah, the centurion that Mr. Marty said has such great faith. Very good. Yes, sir. Job, that faith that endures. Very good. Okay, and then for courage, who'd you got? Isaiah, who'd you put for courage? Daniel. Andrew, who'd you put for courage? Very good. Hayden, who'd you put for courage? David. Very good. Yes, ma'am, who'd you put for courage? Rahab. Love that. Represents some of these Bible women that are just amazing. JL, right? Deborah. Anybody? Yes. Esther. Thank you. So I hope that you're also able to put down the names of Christians that you've met and you respect and that you look up to and people that are encouraging there. So the whole point of that exercise is this. It's not exactly like you have to work real hard for these answers. They're literally sitting in front of you. And all I'm saying is just grab it. Like just pick it up and take hold of it. What does Proverbs say? Chapter 19, verse 8. He who gets wisdom loves his own soul. He who gets wisdom loves his own soul. When you stop and you look at followers of Christ and you turn to them for biblical answers, it's taking care of yourself. He who keeps understanding will find good. Verse 20, listen to counsel and accept discipline that you may be wise the rest of your days. I'm kind of hoping that's a lot of days for you guys. I'm kind of hoping it's a lot of days for me still. All right, but I am the old guy today. Tracy told me the other day I'm ancient. That was real fun. Okay, verse 20. Listen to counsel and accept discipline that you may be wise the rest of your days. Many plans are in a man's heart, but the counsel of the Lord will stand. These answers plus that come from followers of Christ, that's what stands. And so some of those can just be observed. You see the teacher in your class. You see the kind of family that someone has. Some can just be observed. Some can just be heard. You're just paying attention to a sermon. Or you're reading an old like Bible tract. You know, probably don't even know what those are. But track racks used to be a thing in church buildings. You can go look at articles on the back of the bulletin. Some can be heard or read. Some are going to have to be discovered. I'm going to talk just a minute about that as we wrap up. And some, they only come from really spending time with those Christians that you look up to and respect. Going to lunch with them, talking to them after services, really building an actual friendship with those people. So you can walk up to somebody that's on your list and say, hey, would you just tell me more about this? Would you just tell me more about that instrumental music thing? Or tell me more about that marriage and divorce thing? Or just tell me some more about this. Or what did you do when you had to make a big choice about going to this game or coming to Wednesday night class or going to this concert or coming to Sunday night services or going to this gospel meeting or going to this youth diva? Like, what did you do when you had to like face a question like that? Or would you just please show me some verses that talk about whatever? Please show me some verses that talk about choosing a good friend. Show me some verses that talk about decision making. Just to go and discover and invest in these people. To say, hey, lots of people are just like talking about abortion. What's pleasing to God? Or lots of people are talking about homosexuals. What is pleasing to God? Or lots of people are talking. You can go and just start those conversations, and I'm hoping you will. Again, a slide I don't want to put up. Because it's not just the easy answers that come from followers of Christ. It's the sad ones. Because if you'll observe and you'll listen, you're going to find out the answer, what happens when we're lukewarm. What happens when, like, we don't really take this whole God thing seriously and we push God out of our lives and we say, yeah, I'll get around to that later because come talk to me and the elders and I can answer that question. And I'm standing here with tears in my eyes just thinking about it. And I can answer some questions for you. What happens when you marry a weak Christian? Guys, 1 or 2% of the time, They step up and they become strong and they become godly leaders. But that's a small percentage of the time. And see, part of the trouble is that they become weak and they drag you down with them, and then they're not here. And so to answer that question, I have to walk around the building and I have to go, well, like, there was this family and they used to sit here, but they're not here anymore. And you wouldn't have really noticed that because you were too young when they left. But I can answer this question for you, and I can answer it from the followers and the ones who aren't following in the footsteps of Christ. And I can show you what immaturity looks like. And I can show you what maturity looks like. You see that one. But boy, it's awfully sad when there are people that think they're mature and they're really just phoning it in. And I can show you. And I can show you what it looks like when people go to churches that don't take Bible authority seriously, and how everything just gets a little more worldly and a little more worldly and a little more worldly. And then the divorce, and then the bad language, and then the dishonesty, and all of the things that happen. When you bring your questions to followers of Christ, you will get answers. Sometimes it's the really awesome questions, but sometimes it's even the sad questions that you didn't know to ask, but that a follower of Christ can help you see the answer to. And so here's the challenge. You can text me and Bill and Eric anytime about anything at all. And if you see a number up there that is not in your phone, by all means, pull your phone out right now. Get rid of my stupid little thing. Set that down. Get your phone out. You can just text us right now. And you can be like, hey, Bill, I'm going to talk to you later about something. Or you can text me right now and you can be like, hey, I just wanted to put your number in my phone so that if I ever have a flat tire on the side of the road and I need a little help, like, I know that you're a preacher and you have to come help me. Like, whatever it is, you put that number in your phone right now if you don't already have it in there. Okay? This slide is up there for a reason, because we got your back. We want to help you. And we want to help you in high school, and we want to help you in college, and we want to help you when you're a young married person or you're a young single person, and we want to help you when your boss has been a total loser and you don't know what to do, and we want to help you if it's 2 a.m. and you're not sure who to call. You call one of those three numbers. Because there are followers of Christ that want nothing but what's best for your soul. And we will be there for you. All right? Those numbers are real, and those numbers are people that love you. How did Jesus answer those questions? Final slide. Peter passed by the fig tree, and he said, whoa, look at that fig tree that you cursed. It's withered. And Jesus answered and said to them, have faith in God. When you bring your questions to followers of Christ, we're going to give you a rock to stand on, something solid, something meaningful, to build up your faith in God. And I hope that's the people you'll bring your questions to. Thank you guys so much for your participation.